Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on The Score.
The Bulls wanted to target someone that would complement this front office well, and with Arturs Karnišovas being a pure basketball mind, they targeted and found someone in Mark Eversley, who is also a great talent evaluator and also has relationships with players that he's been on in Washington, Toronto, and now Philadelphia. He was a Nike executive before that. So there are a lot of roots being formed or have been formed for Mark Eversley in the basketball community.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
That's Shams Charania from Stadium and The Athletic, one of the top NBA insiders, discussing Mark Eversley, who the Bulls hired away from Philly to promote him to be the general manager under Arturs Karnišovas. We have a guest from the Philadelphia Inquirer who covers the Sixers, Keith Pompey, who will join us hopefully in a matter of moments here to discuss the new Bulls boss. And Mac, this is all like an on-paper reaction right now. Like, I don't think any Bulls fan or observer can have a strong, hard-lined take on this, because not only have they not done anything, there hasn't been a trade, a free agency, a draft, anything like that, we don't exactly know how empowered Mark Eversley is going to be and what Arturs Karnišovas' management style or delegation strategy is going to be. So, like, all of this looks really good on paper, and it looks much more modern than John Paxson's Bulls of the last 18 years. But so maybe just different is better. But in terms of like what Mark Eversley's exact roles are going to be, we still don't know the answer to that yet.
Yeah, I am pretty sure they know, but I hope they know or will discover it very, very soon when they get together and actually start having work time, whenever that is. I think you're right. I think change is good regardless. There's reason to be optimistic because you didn't feel like it was ever going to get better under the direction it went under John Paxson. So, yeah, while there are a lot of unknowns, there are a lot of reasons to be optimistic because some of the on-paper boxes have been checked, and we've talked about that, and that's relatability. That's getting more involved in the math element of basketball. It's spending more time and resources on international scouting. There's a lot of areas where the Bulls have been lapsing, and these guys are supposed to be the ones who get all that and are going to fix it, hopefully. So I think you should have some optimism, even though we don't know much yet.
Yeah, what I heard from the NBA guy that I reached out to yesterday was that everybody likes him. No one has a bad word to say about him, about Mark Eversley. And
that'll
don't know,
change.
Right, exactly. Because now he's, you know, he was Brian Colangelo's right-hand man in Philly. And when Colangelo was pushed out in a bit of shame in 2018 because his wife was creating anonymous Twitter accounts to fight with Sixers fans and defend his honor online, which
I
is just
this country.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's going to go over well. Did you say he's ready, Tanny? We got him. Oh, sorry. I couldn't hear you here. You know, it's everyone's broadcasting these new places, but I'm excited to welcome this guy on. He covers the Philadelphia Sixers for the Philly Inquirer. You can find him on Twitter at Pompey on Sixers. Keith Pompey, kind enough to join us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Keith, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. What do you think Bulls fans should know about their new general manager, Mark Eversley?
You know, kind of like what you said. No one thinks very. I mean, everybody I spoke to and every time I dealt with them, You know, he was a great guy. He's also has a great eye for talent. When he was in Toronto, you know, he was the one behind them going after and get DeMar DeRozan. Here, a rookie that they have for the Sixers, his name is Matisse Thybulle, who, you know, was, you can argue, one of the steals of the draft. Like, he's a guy that, you know, he identified back when he was a junior in college. And he's a great asset for the Sixers. So the one thing is you have to realize that he's good. A, he's good with building relationships, and he has a great eye for talent. And I think that's the two things that really stand out to me.
Keith, the relationship part is of big interest to Bulls fans because this organization has never been able to woo a franchise-changing free agent. When I hear people described as having good people skills, I'm always encouraged to hear more. Can you give us a story that would illuminate some of Mark Eversley's people skills?
Well, I mean, part of it, well, one thing I will tell you that if you really speak to agents, and, you know, you really have to have a lot of great relationships with agents. And whenever I talk to them and they bring up his name, they always just glow and about him. But, you know, there's been times when, you know, let's say before a game or after a game or what have you, that you would see Eversley, you know, sitting, you know, at the court side or like in the locker room or outside the locker room, just chatting it up with a player. And sometimes there's a guy who may have had a bad game and he's giving them words of encouragement. You know, also I've heard stories about where even down to assistant coaches, you know, like they all specifically work with guys. And, you know, Eversley is in the front office, but he notices things. Like, he'll say, hey, man, I really like the way that guy's jump shot looks. You know, you're doing a great job with him. And, like, little things like that go a long way. You know, sometimes you might say, so what? He saw that. But typically a guy in the front office, you know, really doesn't say that a lot. But he says the little things that make people feel welcome and feel part of a, you know, a part of the family, so to speak.
Well, Keith, the Bulls ex-general manager Gar Foreman, Jimmy Butler's trainer, said he had less integrity than a drug dealer. So you're saying that that's not going to be a headline we're going to be hearing about Mark Eversley in the next couple of years?
Nah, I can't. You know what? The thing about Mark is, you know, when I first met him, you know, because when he came here, when Brian came here, you knew that, first of all, Brian was going to hire him. That's all everybody kept saying, that he was Brian's right-hand man. So I didn't know how to take him, you know what I mean? But when I met him, and nothing against Brian, but, you know, when somebody's that close to someone else. But I remember, you know, he came up to me. He was nice every time I would see him. You know, he would take the time to chat, you know, if it was on the record, off the record, you know, just having, you know, formal conversations. And like I said, it's like he has a lot of integrity. And, you know, you look at it, you know, again, he was, you know, Brian's right-hand man, he stayed. And it was one of those things where, you know, I honestly believe that, you know, Matisse Thybulle, in my opinion, was like the late steal of the draft. And the funny thing is, you would not know that that Mark was responsible to it for it because he never talked about it. It was like other people had to tell me, well, like, Mark's not going to tell you this, but, you know, Mark's been eyeing him for a while. So he's not a me guy. He's a we guy. And I think that, you know, with his relationships, you know, especially with Nike, you know, his relationships that he had with Vince Carter and his family and other, you know, marquee basketball players, that's going to help a whole lot in regards to free agency.
Keith, I'd like to widen the focus a little bit if I can. From an outsider's perspective, you're a man who covers the NBA. What is your perception of how the Bulls have been wallowing in the mire for the past decade or so?
Well, you know, you got to realize, I covered the Sixers, right? So I covered the process. So I covered a team who for 5 years or 4.5 years, they were tanking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so it's kind of like, no matter how bad the Bulls were, you can argue that they were better than the Sixers. Now, the one thing that I will say is that, you know, you look at the Bulls and you will say that they underachieved. you know, you still say that they had some drafts, you know, where they thought these guys were going to be, you know, top notch, and they never, you know, performed to their expectations. I think that, you know, when Butler was there, when they had D. Rose, you know, initially in 2013, whatever. I mean, they had a phenomenal team, you know, 2012, they have a great team, but I think they haven't built upon that. But I will say that I'm going to be honest, and I'm not just saying this because I know Mark, but I am saying this because I know Mark. I feel like with the market of Chicago, you know, being the third largest city in America, and what a city it is a great attraction for free agents. And when you have a guy who has that type of relationship with people and who's a straight up guy, you know, it's one of those things. I feel as if that is a win-win, you know, for the Bulls, and is a win-win for him. Because when you look at it, you just have to say that there was some bad moves made recently, and some of the guys that they drafted just underachieved. And then, you know, you hear the stories about, you know, the guys getting into it with the coach. So I think that Mark is, you know, a guy who they're going to respect. He could be a buffer. You know, he could be someone, you know, he didn't play in the NBA, but he's someone that guys will respect and someone that they will confide in. And when I talk to players about him, you know, especially guys who were traded, you know, they always said that they respect Mark because he was always up front with them. You know, he wasn't one of those guys where they were blindsided by what happened. They always looked at him as the guy who they knew, you know, would always be honest and be true. So word around the league spreads, and I think that's going to help the Bulls attract some free agents.
We're talking to Keith Pompey. He's the beat writer for the Sixers for the Philadelphia Inquirer, which is where the Bulls hired Mark Eversley away from the Philadelphia Sixers to be their new general manager. We don't know exactly how Arturis Karnišovas is going to set up the hierarchy and what exactly he's going to ask of his general manager. All he's said so far is he wants a critical thinker who complements his own skill sets. And one thing I'm wondering is, if one of Mark Eversley's jobs is to be the front man of this, like Bulls make a trade, Bulls make a draft pick, there's a press conference, and instead of the president talking, it's the GM. How do you think Mark Eversley would handle that role, which, as you mentioned, this media market, that's fairly important?
I think he would do well. I mean, I think it may take a little bit of adjusting. I mean, I'm not saying adjusting like he's going to be up there stuttering or anything like that, but that will probably be the first time that he will be a front man. But the thing is, when you meet him, you know, Mark is a very well-spoken, a very well-dressed guy. You know, he's, you know, articulate. And so I think that he'll be fine. And let's face it now, like nowadays when you get guys and they're out there talking in these press conferences, they're basically, I like to say lawyered up, but they're PR'd up. So you're really not going to, you know, get as much as you think that you will get. You know, you get things like off the side talking to them. So I think that, you know, he's going to give you, you know, what they want him to give you. But at the same time, you know, he's not going to be the type of guy that's always going to be, you know, hiding, you know, in his office, avoiding people. I mean, he's a good guy. He's an upfront guy. I think that people are going to like him. Like I said, he's, you know, he's articulate. You know, he knows the game. He's great with building relationships. So I feel like he's not going to be one of those type of, you know, front office executives who, when he speaks to the media, you know, he wants to let you know that he knows way more than him and that you don't know what you're talking about. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to help people out, and he's also going to be a guy that's going to be very polite and pleasant.
And then last thing from me, Keith, people have been writing a lot about DeMar DeRozan. You referenced it, steal of the draft. You've referenced it a couple of times. How much ownership of the high-profile miss of Markelle Fultz with the number one overall pick should be put on Mark Eversley?
You know, that's a tough one. I mean, that is going to be the one thing that if you go to the Wikipedia page of Mark Eversley or something like that, there's going to be a big portion of it, you know, talking about that. But the one thing that I might add is one of these things in Philadelphia. you know, and I'm one of the guys. You know, we were all writing that they need to do whatever they can to get Markelle Fultz. How Markelle Fultz on paper was the best fit to go up against Ben Simmons. I mean, we all said it. We all said it. And, you know, Markelle didn't have a great workout from when we were there. You know, his workout was very underwhelming. But at the same time, you know, it was one of those things. You see it, it's one workout. You see what he did in college, and you're saying yourself that it's going to fit. Now, once he got here, you know, I feel as if the pressure of being a first overall pick and also playing alongside Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, like, let's face it, he came normally the first overall pick, you know, it's your team. He wasn't Robin to Ben Simmons, Batman. He was Alfred. Like, he wasn't even a sidekick. And I think that affected him a lot. And I think when you go back and you want to blame it on Mark Eversley, you know, I don't think that that's fair, because all of us were drinking the Kool-Aid and said it. Now, the one thing that I will say about Mark, they gave up on Markelle, and Mark wanted to see it work. Mark still believed in the kid. Now, the kid isn't all the way back, but people forget he had a triple-double against the Lakers and won that game. You know,
yeah, he's looking better.
He's looking better. And so it's going to take a time, but it's going to take a while. But, you know, Mark did make that. He did pull the trigger, and he pushed for it. But it was a lot of people in Philly celebrating when they drafted Markelle Fultz. I think Markelle, just the pressure was just too big for him.
Keith Pompey covers the Sixers for the Philly Inquirer. Good insight on the Bulls' new general manager, Mark Eversley. Keith, thank you very much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Keith.
Hey, thanks for having me too, fellas.
You bet. Take care. Have a good day.
That's Keith Pompey from the Philly Inquirer. Anything stand out to you, Mac?
Well, I did what he suggested to do. He said if you do a Wikipedia search of Mark Eversley, you'll find some things. So I did that, and I can't help but get a kick out of the idea that this has been written by a Canadian. And your description of him, as you teased him a little while ago, who is this man, this tall black Canadian who's coming to Chicago? It says on Wikipedia, Mark Eversley is the general manager of the Chicago Bulls, a team in the National Basketball League. After university, Eversley worked at Nike in their retail and marketing departments. This is Canadian Wikipedia. We got to get him his American Wikipedia page.
Okay, I like it.
After
good.
University, on way to university, use of seatbelt is compulsory. He is Mark Eversley. First Canadian-trained basketball player ever to become an NBA general manager. The first NBA general manager from the greater Toronto area, and the first African-American to be general manager of the Chicago Bulls. And you know who they are, Danny? They're a team in the National Basketball League.
I'm learning so much. Hey, if it's on Wikipedia, it must be true.
Yeah. Which university, by the way? Urbana University. That's where Mark Eversley matriculated. Urbana.
Okay.
Not familiar with it. Are you?
No, I'm Champaign-Urbana, but not just Urbana by itself. I'm not too familiar with that.
No, it's in Ohio.
Okay, well, the more you know. I thought, listen, if he's a good people person, that is a huge step up from what they lost.
Right, he's the anti-John McDonough, who apparently was as evil as the day was long.
I don't know that that's a fair characterization.
Well, it's being suggested. There are a lot of people coming out of the woodwork to fire. Yeah, bosses can be real pains in the ass. Who knew? We'll get into it a little bit later on, but maybe some people feel I have painted John McDonough as a saintly figure, and I called him a snake many years ago on the air. I don't know how saintly a snake can be, but there's a lot of chirping going on about what it was like. And Dan Carcillo was a delight, by the way, as was Keith Pompey. We are 2 for 2 on today's guests. That'll play.
That'll
Come on,
play
get
well.
Your chest out, Straw.
I mean, I'm straw at this guy. I'm very excited to ruin that streak with Hub Arkish at 4 o'clock as I run a theory past him, and we'll see how quickly he dismisses me and shoots it down because he's just has no time for my nonsense. But it's gonna be a fun running bit. We'll do 15 minutes with Hub, and then for the last 5 minutes, I'll come up with a football. I'll present him one of my football theories, and he can summarily dismiss me. It's going to be fun.
I could, but I don't really want to argue with you one way or the other. I don't think.
I love that.
That got a hearty laugh out of a Dan McNeil. That was good.
Did. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
like, you know. I'm here, so I may as well. I am too cool for this room, but since I'm here...
I can't believe I have to take in this idiocy, but...
I'll answer the kid's question.
I could, but I don't really want to argue with you one way or the other. I don't think...
God,
I still think I was right.
I was excited about that, wasn't
you
I?
You really liked that.
A little over-exuberance. Maybe, it's like Mully with Cole Kmet today. My goodness. I mean, Cole Kmet, warm and fuzzy interview, but I didn't find him to be Gronk-like in terms of his ability to cut up a room. Boy, he got Mully going, though.
Did he?
Yeah, Mully was laughing at – yeah, they had a nice interview with Cole Kmet today.
I love a good media laugh.
Yeah,
I could, but I don't really want to argue with you one way or the other. I don't think
– That's Mully.
Oh my God, that was loud.
That is loud.
Was
I hot?
Fan. I don't know.
Was that back in the carefree days of broadcasting in the Score kitchen?
It's certainly possible. Man, I didn't even think of it. That feels like 10 years ago.
I was thinking about it the other day. The kitchen. Yeah, and I saw Mitch today, and he misses everybody. So, yes, so he would long to have kitchen days if he could get to. Yeah, I saw Mitch for about a half an hour today.
That's nice.
I told you that in the show meeting today.
No, that you did. I was kind of presenting
it. Did you forget?
Yeah, a little bit. In one ear, out the other. No, but it's exciting. What details can you share? What was the occasion? Just a little social distancing hang?
Yeah, he misses people very, very much. And the plane is circling the runway on landing on a deal here in the next little while, it looks like.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, new deal.
I gotta get it's good. Keep the whole mob together, man.
Yeah, mobbage.
Can't break it up now.
Hey, can I back up just a little bit?
Yeah, do whatever you want.
Mark Eversley is not an African American. He's an African Canadian.
That is true.
Right?
North American.
Yes, but it didn't say in the Wikipedia page North American. It said he's the first African American. Can't be born in Canada and be African American. I don't think.
No, he's black. He's the first black general manager of the Bulls.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, he's not. Yeah, that's
all right.
Accurate.
All right, I'm glad we did that. We got to improve Canadian Wikipedia.
Okay.
I'll do that if I can get across the border in July.
That's a perfect cause again for this show. That sounds like exactly the type of thing that we would take up. I got something for you off of this big NFL news weekend, and I'm curious if you think some changes are going to be here to stay. That's next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm an open book, but I mean, I don't have any specific interest.
That's Jalen Johnson with us yesterday. Bottom of the hour on The Score, brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including healthcare professionals. Thank you for helping to keep us safe. Hub Arkish coming up at 4 o'clock on the Bears draft and the NFL draft as a whole. Mac, I don't know if you've seen this, but just different people. I saw John Lynch earlier today with Ian Rappaport on NFL Network, Bob Quinn from the Lions, and then Jason Licht to Peter King. He's the GM of the Buccaneers, who let Peter King virtually embed in his war room as he was running the Tampa Bay Buccaneers first round. Licht said, "Here's what's crazy. I'm almost at the point where I like working this way. I'm getting so much done, and I'm going back to the office. It's going to be different. It's amazing how much we've been able to get accomplished working this way," end quote. And John Lynch was talking about the work-life balance maybe changing and being open to that conversation in the NFL. I'm wondering, given the relative success of the NFL draft in this way, right, most watched ever, 16 million people went off without a technological hitch, they were able to be around their families, do you think there's any validity to the idea that football people will be open to more of a work-life balance and working differently once things return to normal?
Are you talking about as it applies to the draft specifically or overall?
They seem to – the conversation that these guys have been having was, we loved the draft. We're actually accomplishing more overall this way. There needs to be a conversation about things happening differently overall going forward, draft and football operations as a whole.
Okay. I think that's one thing that the pandemic has done for every business. It's forced people to push back and re-examine the way they've done business in many cases forever, in some cases to a much larger degree than they had been with the use of video conferencing for 25 years now and virtual conferencing. I'm sure there are some who are going to feel like they did a better job, that they were, and there probably will be some who aren't so sure, and I think the bread will be in the pudding down the road when their players start showing them what they have as to whether this way was a better way of going about it. But I don't think the NFL draft, as we've known it for many years now, is going to change. I think as soon as the NFL can, it will go back to throwing what it believes to be the biggest party of April anywhere in the world, and that is its annual draft coverage. There's no way the NFL is going to give up taking its roadshow around the country. It killed them to not be in Vegas this year. That's not going to change. But will
there
be?
Yeah, and they already have the locations announced for the right. I mean, next year it's Cleveland, then it's Vegas, then it's Kansas City. So I'm not suggesting that they're not going to throw a party, but I am fascinated by the idea of, like, when we get back to normal, what our new normal will be and what changes will be temporary and what will be permanent. And I've always thought that some of these people in football, they're so crazy and they work such insane hours, and it's just because they don't really know what else to do. And there's like this, like,
because they have no interests.
Yeah, right. There's just like this sick pride.
I'm an open book, but I mean, I don't have any specific interests.
Right. It's like I sleep at the facility. I have dinner with my family once a month. Like, I have changes of clothes here. I built a shower into the office. Like, it's just, it's not a healthy lifestyle. And I do wonder, like, work smarter, not harder. So these GMs and coaches, they're not getting bothered nearly as much as they've been scouting from home because they don't have people knocking on their door 27 times a day.
Right.
I wonder if it's possible that there will be some sort of epiphany here and be like, you know what? I don't need to work 125 hours a week to run an NFL team when there's 53 dudes on a roster.
There could be. And people are going to have a different feeling about the whole experience once it's all said and done. And normalcy is going to take a long time to get back to. And when we look at how businesses, which are going to still be economically bleeding for some time, it's going to be a slow progression into getting back to the way things, in air quotes, the way things were. And I think a lot less money is going to be spent. And I think the industries that are going to take it the worst are travel and hospitality industries. I think if I'm glad I'm not an investor right now in a hotel chain or an airline. I don't have any of those companies right now because their business is going to be affected for some time. That is the NFL credo, though. Work until you drop. And in some cases, maybe there's that. Bill Belichick is one of those guys. There's a lot of evidence it's paid off for him, but he also likes to play golf and go fishing. So maybe later in life he did have a little bit more success finding a balance. My favorite of whenever we have this conversation about the prototypical workaholic NFL coach, I always think back to Steve Spurrier when he took the Redskins job, and somebody mentioned to him how NFL life is much different when you're the czar in Gainesville, Florida. And you're guaranteed a lot of easy recruits, and you're the king there. This is a different NFL life. And he said, yeah, Jim Haslett's in the office at 4 o'clock in the morning every day in New Orleans. How's that working for him?
It's great.
I loved it that he took on a guy specifically that he thought was a peanut head. He was right to pick Jim Haslett.
Yeah, and Spurrier was the guy who, like, he was bad that he was a good golfer because it showed that he spent time away from it and all of that. Like, he was the extreme in one direction, and then the Andy Reid sleeping at the facility is the extreme at the other end of the direction. But there's more guys like Reid than there are like Spurrier. It's one thing that I was thinking of is, do you need to bring 60 players to the draft when you're only going to have 32 guys in the first round? When it was kind of cool to look into their living rooms and see them with their families, and all of these kids are pretty technologically savvy. They have FaceTime and iPhones and Instagram, and they set up a camera in the corner, turn it on, give a feed to NFL Network and ESPN, put on headphones to do your interview. Like, it worked well. So for next year's draft in Cleveland, okay, you bring Justin Fields, you bring Trevor Lawrence, you bring the tackle from Oregon, you bring the guys who you know are going to be top 10, top 15 picks, and then let everyone else chill at home. And do it that way. And so then as you go throughout the draft, you get that, like, small-town America human interest story. And then for Trevor Lawrence being the number one overall pick of the Jaguars, you get all the pomp and circumstance. I thought that there was some charm to it, and we questioned the NFL going forward with it. And I thought that they should do it because everybody was working with the same disadvantage. I know you thought it was kind of sending a bad message. Hub, I think, was more towards your end than my end. But, man, they raised $100 million for charity. There were no real technological problems, and it was a nice distraction. I think the NFL did it right. I don't know if it's their finest hour, like Roger Goodell said. I'm no NFL historian, but
no.
It was a pretty incredible accomplishment when you sit back and think about what they just did.
It was. I never dreamed it would be as successful technology-wise as it was. I thought there would be far more disasters. So, yes, it was a raging success. I think it's a colossal overstatement for the commissioner to submit that it's the NFL's finest hour.
Yeah,
it's a bit much.
Well, and that's that syrupy stuff, right?
There,
where
there's Goodell. Boy, oh boy.
Drape themselves in the flag and say, hey, we're healing you. It's like, well, you distracted us for a few hours.
He has. Thank you, Roger. Your league has provided us with salvation. Thank you so much for the shield and all it brings to us. I agree that, you know, the technology, especially with, you know, young men in their 20s, they all know how to do it. So if you can figure it out as seamlessly and smoothly as they all did in the 2.5 days I was sitting in front of coverage of it, then bring more of it if you want to. I never felt there was a reason to bring 60, 75 guys to New York, but they want to have guys there on day two as well, if possible.
You're right. That was the idea. But so, like, obviously this is the smallest of changes of COVID-19, but I do think, I was like, man, it really didn't suffer that much. Like, as I've been watching, you know, John Oliver, right? I watch that late night show every, you know, it airs Sunday night. I usually watch it on Monday or Tuesday. The show isn't as good without a studio audience laughing at the jokes. Like, it's a little weird having him do jokes to just dead silence, but right. it's 92% the show that it normally is. You know, like, The Daily Show's happening, Kimmel's happening, Fallon's happening. They just did the NFL draft. Like, ESPN is doing their lineup of talk programming. Like, my buddy Nick Wright is doing his show from his home. He's got his camera, and they're doing it. Is it as seamless doing it with a talk show with four people and four cameras in four different locations? No, but I think they're showing that you can pull it off, and people will watch and will consume it at basically the same level, if not more, given that, you know, everyone's at home and there's not as much else to do. I think that there's just going to be a lot of ramifications for this, where they're going to be like, why do we need to do a big studio? Why do we need to travel all of these people to this location when we can just send one HD camera into someone's living room and he can stare into it and he can do his show from there? I think we're going to see a lot of things 5-10 years from now in the entertainment television landscape. We're going to be like, you know what it changed? COVID-19.
Yeah, it's going to change a lot of things, probably a lot of things that we haven't even considered as of yet. We're within an advantage in the remote locations doing what we do. You talk about Nick doing the video component to it. That's one more thing that can go wrong, one more thing to fuss over. But it's just talk. The language of talk is much more facile than comedy or music. You talk about, you know, not having the audience to respond to jokes. I don't know if you have ever watched a sitcom without the laugh track, but I never thought this would be the psychological result of it, but it's not as enjoyable. So it is a tough trick to make comedy work on a remote location, because you don't have the immediate response, and you don't, you know, unless you're putting a laugh track in and music. you were very funny last week describing Keith Richards and his attempt to be a part of Concert for the World.
Dude.
As four members of the Rolling Stones got together to share their homes with us. That was bad. And you know what? And the anthem for the draft was off too. That did not go as well as it could have. You're putting people in different locations in a pretty tricky position when you're asking them to do music or to do comedy.
Well, the idea of an anthem before an NFL draft is just so ridiculous. Like, we don't do the anthem before a presidential debate, but we're the NFL. So we have to remind you about patriotism. So here,
yes, they do.
Let's go into Harry Connick's living room. Just ridiculous. Hub Harkish at 4 o'clock. You want optimism on when sports comes back? America's pastime has it for you. It's next on The Score.
Governor Cuomo says he can envision baseball in New York this summer. Can you envision baseball in Chicago this summer? And have you talked to the owners of the White Sox and Cubs?
Those decisions are going to be made at the league level. They're not going to be made by individual team owners. And yes, we've had ongoing conversations about what that might look like. We're obviously a ways away from that because we haven't seen the level of cases decline on a consistent basis. We're still seeing them rise. But can I envision a world where baseball might return to Chicago this summer? Yes. Is it likely to be without fans? Probably.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot yesterday on cautious optimism for the return of baseball to Chicago this summer, and I think that was met with a little bit of relief, because at least it's not the Arizona plan or the Florida plan, and seeing them play in Wrigley Field at a guaranteed rate, even if you can't go, would at least have some degree of normalcy, and that would mean that players are not being quarantined because they'd be able to travel from city to city, right? So, like, that's a step in the right direction, I thought, Mac.
Yeah, it sounds good to me, and I think the idea of any large gathering the rest of the calendar year is probably a tough putt at this point, don't you suspect? And I know you weren't at Syracuse the day they taught science, and I wasn't at Ball State the day they taught it, but I can't imagine by the end of this calendar year a concert venue or a stadium being full of spectators. I can't see that happening the rest of the year. Certainly at least not until October.
Yeah, I can't see it either. Fans, but just to get the games back and get them on TV and radio would be such a great step. And then, you know, in-person attendance, we can deal with that as we go. But this is from Bob Nightingale, and we can spend more time on it as we go because it's just the latest thing that has been floated. But he's quoting...
If you guys want to have Bob Nightingale on to talk about it, you guys can certainly do that.
Thanks, Jed.
Thank you, Jed. Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Maybe it's a dream scenario. Maybe it's premature to get excited. But then again, maybe it just might work. Major League Baseball officials have become cautiously optimistic that the season will start in late June and no later than July 2nd, playing at least 100 regular season games, according to three executives with knowledge of the talks. And not only would baseball would be played, but it would be played in their own Major League ballparks, albeit with no fans. MLB is considering a three-division, 10-team plan in which teams play only within their division, a concept gaining support among owners and executives. It would abolish the traditional American and National Leagues and realign the divisions based on geography. Obviously, the plan is subject to medical experts, but the reducement of travel would be a big thing. The Cubs and White Sox, Mac, under this format, would be in the Central Division. The 10-team Central Division would be the Cubs, White Sox, Brewers, Cardinals, Royals, Reds, Indians, Twins, Braves, and Tigers. And
damn,
apparently,
no Pirates
one
games
of the
to watch.
Yeah, and then last thing here, and then one of the hangups apparently is that owners are saying that players would need to agree to reduced salary because revenues would be slashed dramatically with no parking and ticket sales and in-stadium revenues.
Right. Good luck with that. Yep. And that's just for the duration of this year, yes?
Yeah, that would just be this season.
And what do they call this at the end of the year in the COVID-19 baseball season that changes the way the leagues are structured? How do you determine I guess you have to asterisk it.
Well, it says that there would be an expanded postseason to make up for the reduced regular season.
Yeah.
An executive says this is going to be a season like we've never seen, but that's fine. At least it's a season. And I heard a good point. I think it was in Jeff Passan's column. I don't remember, but it probably was. He always makes good points. But it was basically, last time Dodgers won the World Series was 1981. And everyone just
88
says that 88. Is fact.
88.
What?
88.
88. But there was a shortened season, right? There was a shortened eight. One of the teams, it was a shortened season around then.
That's correct.
81.
Yeah, 81. 81 was right. Right. 81 was the shortened season, and the 81 no one references it way after the fact. There's no asterisk in the record books for the shortened season.
Nor is there for the 2013 Blackhawks, who played only 48 games.
Yeah. So. No, I don't think just like there's not going to be an asterisk on if the Dolphins messed up the Tua pick because they didn't get to work him out in person. Like, it's just everybody was playing by the same set of rules. You made your pick and you'll have to live with the results. So if they play 100 regular season baseball games and the only difference is instead of playing the Pirates 19 times, the Cubs have to play the Royals 14 times because it reduces travel. I don't know why that season would have to have an asterisk attached to it. It would be different. Historians would remember it differently. But yeah. I don't see why there would have to be an official asterisk on it.
All right. It seems ambitious for that heavy of a game load. But it's nice to know there are plans in place. And I'm eager to see how many players actually feel like their safety isn't threatened by this. Because the logic of it is, common sense, it is. It's not practicing social distancing. It just isn't. The game doesn't set itself up for it. You can do the best you can, even in an empty stadium, to stay away from each other. But there are going to be situations when people are violating the 6-foot rule. There's going to be physical contact. Guys are going to go home to their families, and they're going to bring whatever contact their families have had with others into their clubhouse. And you're going to have – it is going to push the envelope. I no matter how safe they are, it is unavoidable to have contact that is a violation of social distancing if you're going to be playing baseball. That can't be disputed unless you're changing the game.
I agree, right? There's going to be guys at first base. You're going to be holding the runner on.
Yep.
The catcher and the batter will be within 6 feet. Presumably there will be an umpire there. Maybe they'll try the robot umpire thing, but if this is possible and testing becomes more and more available and it doesn't take away from the healthcare system, I'd sign on the dotted line right now. Baseball, 100-game season, like baseball in America in home stadiums, 4th of July weekend, with the end goal being a 100-game season and a World Series decided on the field, yeah, I'd sign right now.
I would, too.
Right?
I would, too.
And we'd get more Cubs-Sox games. How great would that be?
Yeah. You know, tomorrow, by the way, was supposed to be one of our preempted days. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Oh,
Tanny, how's that make you feel?
Stop, Mac. Enough of that.
Yeah, and you know what would have even sweetened the pot more? We would have had Pirates audio after the game for our post-post game.
Oh, well, listen.
Now, look
get 100
here. I don't like that kind of talk. Now, just stop it. It upsets me.
Hey, there's probably going to be a lot more doubleheaders, guys, if this plan happens. I'm sure you guys will get plenty of canceled shows.
You guys, you don't enjoy them.
No, I don't enjoy them at all. I'll just be doing solo shows on the stream. You know me. Never met a microphone. I didn't like, no, I'll be thrilled to take them. Hub Arkish will join us to review the Bears draft, how he thinks the NFL did, and I will run my what's better than a draft, no draft at all theory by him. I'm sure he'll just embrace it with open arms. That's next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.